Okay, we've got two. I'll put you.
Whatever you think. Turn everything around.
Can you pass down an opener?
Please eat.
See all the corks from my buddy over here.
Wow, he brings the portables. Very good. Very good. Very good.
If it's recorded, then you can't say anything that's politically incorrect.
You haven't been listening to the podcast.
That depends if I put it on. Maybe I can send out to select their people.
Remember when Clark Kent would put on the glasses?
Usually
from David to David, they don't know. It's like a Superman.
No, D-Cats.
It's like the Bart, right? No, he was Superman because he wore glasses.
Don't hurt yourself,
Bob. Here. Doesn't take a lot for me.
No.
Just go ahead. You know the old story, he says, how do you like your son-in-law? He says, he doesn't know how to drink, he doesn't know how to smoke, he doesn't know how to gamble. But what's the problem? Because he smokes and he drinks and he gambles.
He's covered the other side.
Mm-hmm. Not much.
Call the time guy, you mean?
Is it ready? Okay, as I said, I'll get right into my remarks, and we can, because I know everybody's on a tight schedule today.
Let me say this before I speak.
Yeah, right. I have a few words to say before I go. Bill reminds me. Somebody said last week. I went to a wedding. Whose wedding? And out in the Carousel Club. And Inzi Minzer gave me the hearing things. And he said I'm gonna give this to the people in the show so they can have a nice sleep while you're talking. So I said, you're missing the point. If they don't hear me, how are they gonna fall asleep?
When Rabbi Wolberg was asked how big this congregation is, he says the sanctuary sleeps 1,200.
Very good. Anyhow, I want to say something this year about the sin of the party of Achashverosh. As you know, I'm sure everybody's familiar, there were two opinions. One was the big Aveira, Rashbi and the Talmidim. One says because they bowed down to an idol. The other one was because they said, that they all had a party at the time of Achashverosh. That apparently was a big sin. Now, my remarks today are based on several assumptions over here, because there's so many different agadotas when it comes to Purim, they all contradict each other. So we're going now, according to Tosis, it says the Memuchan is Daniel, not Haman. So when Memuchan says kill the queen, that's in Tosis, yeah? That Daniel was married to a Persian princess and she wouldn't learn Hebrew, and he wanted to, you know, get it on her. That's why he came up with this thing. Because so much is not explicit in the Megillah. Also, my remarks are based on the opinion that Mordechai and Esther were not married, right? Which is what many say, and that Esther was young in her 20s and one of the foremost beautiful women in the world, as the Gemara says, and not a Yerachrokis, and not the opposite. Everybody fixed sex in that particular Mandomer, that she wasn't, and so forth. I don't know why they do, but okay. And my remarks are also heavily based on different parts in the Manos HaLevi, which is the best book. Please take a chair. Manos HaLevi from Alkabetz, who's got a whole world of different sources, a world. Okay. First of all, let's deal with the parties. How many parties were there? Okay? So there was a party of 180 days, and there was a party of 7 days. So are they two parties or one? In other words, is the 7 days the last days of the 180s party, or is it a separate party? So we'll go with the idea there were two parties. That's the partial way of reading. So then read the Megillah closely. If you read the Megillah closely, you'll see that all the fancy Liberace stuff was at the second party. That's very gay, you know. The Glile Kes Amudi Shesh. They had silver couches with golden, you know, feet, and so forth and so on. I told you the story when Eisenhower first became the American general in England in 1942, he went to visit Churchill for the first time, and the Prime Minister's country residence is checkers. And Churchill had it redone to fit his taste. So the carpet was purple, and the tapestries were all made of red. And here was one big mirror, was the whole ceiling. That was his taste. And Eisenhower walked in, and went like this. And he said, I bet you don't have anything like this in Abilene, Texas, where you're from. And Eisenhower says, we had one house like this, but my mother told us never to go there. So that's Achashverosh. Aglilia Kesev, Mudi Shesh, Mitos, Zahova Kesev. Right? So, wait a minute. That was for the second party, for the people in Shushan. The first party, the big shots, you didn't have to impress like that. You understand? Okay? So, I guess the Sarman department didn't leave the Liberace stuff. For them, 180 days of continuous food and drink was enough. Okay? The locals are impressed with this kind of stuff. But wait, it wasn't for the locals, because the locals lived in Shushan. And the party was called Nimsim B'Shushan Abira. Shushan Abira was the royal compound, like in Peking, the Forbidden City. It was only for the royal establishment. It wasn't for the regular people. People lived across the river in Shushan. Later on, Mordechai has to go across the river to Shushan. So he was in Shushan. But pay attention when it says Shushan Abira. Okay? Now, who lived in Shushan Abira? Not a population as large as the Shushan Air. So he didn't throw a party for a whole Baltimore. He threw a party for the people in the VIP set, like you say today, you know, what's a fancy neighborhood, you know, something like that, Trump Towers, something like that, right? There's one opinion in the Modus Halevi, by the way, that the party was for the Jews. When it says, Cholam Nimsim B'Shushan Abira, it was for the Jews. That is, the Jews who reside in Shushan Abira. But they were the Alma Nimsim B'Shushan Abira in the Pasuk. Okay, who exactly were the Jews living in this VIP situation? Okay? Now, in my opinion, the reason that Chazal say that Vashti was summoned on a Shabbos as opposed to the seventh day of the party was because of this. In other words, how do you read the story? He threw a party for 108 days, then he threw a party for 7 days, and in the course of it, he told Gam Vashti Amakos, the Sama Shtein Oshim, and then he called her in, and she declined, and he killed her, and all the rest of it. When did that happen? So do you read it, you know, like it was the first party and the second party, and then after the second party had the Vashti incident? Obviously not. So it turns out, if you look at it closely, the story of Vashti took place in the first party, right? And, oh good, Eitan's here, that's it. I'm just starting. leave while you can. Leave while you can. Wait a second. So when he called Vashti, you know, that was in the first party. So let's say it's after 20 days, 30 days, 40. Remember, think about 180 days. So, you know, right in the middle of the first party, he called her in and she said no. And the whole story happened. And the party went on, by the way. The party continued. So in other words, that's why Chazal say, what do you mean? It wasn't at the end of the seventh, the last party. It was on a Shabbos. It wasn't the seventh day of anything. Because the way you ordinarily read it is on the seventh day of that seven-day feast. But why would he tell Vashti to go dance naked in front of the Jews? You understand? That doesn't make any sense. So she wasn't summoned during second party, which was a straightforward reading of Sukkim indicates. Makes no sense. Rather, she was summoned on a Saturday during the first party for the elites. Because it says he wanted to show off Haros Ma'amim Vasarimas. He wanted to show the Sarim, the big shots, what she looks like. So it was in the first party. And you know the famous Chazal, he called her on a Saturday because that's when she used to torture her Jewish maids, make them work on Shabbos. So that's where that comes from. The king wouldn't ask her to dance for the Jews and be angry at her refusal, so Vashti was killed in the first party. And that's when it says, Achar Dvorim El Keshocha Melcha Achashverosh, and the king calmed down, and then they said, let's have a beauty party. That's all in the first party. So it went on for 2 weeks, and it's going on for another 10, 15 weeks. And meanwhile, his wife came in, and she wouldn't come in, and he killed her. And then the king didn't stop partying. Okay? He didn't stop partying. He just was real angry. They killed her. And then his anger died down. You see, but he's still drinking. I'm going to be clear about this. Okay? Now, because the show must go on, you know. So if this scenario is accurate, it answers the question, why would the king make a separate party for the Jews of all people? And why the Jews of the royal compound of Shushan Abira, why would they do that? And I'm thinking, by the way, when it says Laksos Kirtzon Ish Va'ish, it means that everyone had his own wine. That's at the first party, not at the second party. But he had all the princes with 127 problems. Each one, this one could have Tokay, this one could have Saki, this one could have this, and all that. which makes more sense. If that's the case, when Chazal say we're shown ish by ish, there was Mordechai and Haman, they were in charge of the first party, not the second party, okay? And after all, why would Haman have any role in catering the second party, which was just for the shoes of Shushan? That makes no sense. Rather, Haman and Mordechai were called in to run a six-month party. That's official dreams about it, which goes to show you that Mordechai Haman had very good executive abilities. If you could, I mean, just think of the, all joking aside, think of the catering involved and the supplying all the rest of it. In other words, a six-month Pesach hotel. Okay, people are doing a six-month Pesach hotel. And by the way, money is no object. Right? That's the point. Money's no object. You know, they have in the Medrash Rabbah, by the way, that a guy tried to imitate Ahasuerus in Israel, some richy rich, and the party, to use Baltimore terms, the party wedding procession began here and ended in Silver Spring. And there was continuous food and drink all the way, but by halfway through, the whole thing caved in because the guy ran out of money. You understand? So Ahasuerus did not run out of money. So it was crazy. All right? Now,
people expect it to keep going.
I don't know what they expected. I mean, there are people expecting a Pesach hotel to go for 6 months also. Right. I paid for this, you know? Right? And so I'm going to sit down. I can't stand. It's hard for my feet. So anyway, this would testify their skills. Okay. Now, in order to understand who these people are that in Shushan Abir that you're throwing a party for, that they're Jews, a little historical context is called here regarding the kings of Persia. According to the Sefer Olam, which is the From Book, Cyrus, with his father-in-law and co-ruler Darius the Medes. It was a guy, Koresh Cyrus, and his father-in-law Darius the Medes. They were all together kings for 3 years, and then they were succeeded by Ahasuerus. Okay? And Darius, we know, really loved Daniel. The whole book of Daniel is about how Darius the king really fell for him, and he put him number one. The question is, how long did Cyrus, who was his son-in-law, how long did he rule? Darius the Mede died before Cyrus. That's how the story goes. So Cyrus ruled a total of 3 years, maybe 2.5 years, because the Gemara says it was the son of Mekutos. As best as I can figure out, here's what happened. We know that Daniel, see, you never hear about Daniel officially in the book. Mordechai's the guy. But you and I know Daniel was numero uno in the Babylonian Empire, in the Persian Empire. He had all these high positions and the king's help from him and this and that and the other. And yet now you don't hear it. It's all Mordechai and Esther. So there's a story behind this story. You understand? If you're talking about American history in the 1940s, and you leave out FDR, there's something, there's a reason. You understand? So as best I can figure is what happened. We know that Daniel stood in high favor with Darius the Mede, so much so that the other nobles were jealous of Daniel, and they arranged for him to be thrown into the lion's den to the extreme displeasure of King Darius. They, like, fooled him. And he went when he was thrown in the dungeon, in the lion's den, and he said, I hope your God will save you. And when he did save him, and Daniel emerged after the morning, the king had the nobles thrown into the lion's den, right? Yeah. And people said what Daniel did was he fed the lions beforehand, so, you know. But it wasn't true, because when the nobles were thrown in with their families, it said they never reached the ground. Right? They never reached the ground. So they were, you know, hungry, the lions. So anyway, we know Daniel stood in high favor over there. And Daniel was obviously able to use his in, right? Hey, come on in. Daniel was able to use his inn with Darius to obtain the Cyrus's famous decree to let the Jews rebuild the temple. Because how did it happen that you had the Babylonian Empire, they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, they were happy that they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, no problem with it. Then a Persian guy, Iranian of all things, comes in, and all of a sudden the Iranian says, I am under command of God to build a temple. The Iranians aren't exactly, I'm not saying in those days they were as bad as like Khomeini and all that, but you can't say that they were lovers of the Jews. So how did Cyrus do so? Unless you say the famous story Josephus says, which is they showed, the Jews showed Cyrus from the book of Isaiah. And in the book of Isaiah, which was written 100 years before, it's a famous passage, Isaiah 45. This is what God says to anointed to Cyrus. I have taken your right hand to subdue nations before you and strip kings of their armor and on open doors before you, all the rest of it. So you know I'm the Lord of the world, and for the sake of Yaakov Avdi and my chosen people Israel. So you were placed in this supreme position to help out Klal Yisrael. Now, who showed him this? Cyrus, the king of Persia. Who showed him that? Okay, the Jews. Daniel. I mean, what Jew was at their court had some kind of access to the king? Now, obviously, the other side said like this. They just wrote this in and they backdated it. Right? I mean, obviously, it makes sense. By the way, Bible scholars will say that. There are two Isaiahs and so forth. So Daniel was the one who got the first decree saying you can build a temple. And in the first year of his reign, Cyrus gave permission to do so. Then Darius died, meaning the father-in-law of Cyrus died, and it was just Cyrus, depriving Daniel of his unique patron. An anti-Jewish faction saw its opportunity, especially this faction included Haman's son, Shimshai, because he's mentioned Shimshai in the book of Daniel as one of the anti-Jewish lobbyists. And they got Cyrus to change his mind, stopping the temple building until further notice. It says in the book of Daniel that you should stop this ad minisim tem until I change my mind. So in other words, because they said if the Jews get a temple, they'll rebel against you, they'll break away the empire, it'll turn out like Syria is turning out right now, breaking into what they call Balkanization, it won't be good, and Cyrus believed it. But not long afterwards, Cyrus died, and was succeeded by a new guy named Ahasuerus. That's the story. So there's a background to the whole story of Megillah, who may even have been the son-in-law, son of Darius to me. Interesting, according to the Chazal, interestingly, the new king moves the capital city from Babel to Shushan Abira, because before they were in Babylon, okay? And that means, so the Daniel team, because the team means his helpers in the lobbying effort, the Daniel team, they moved to the new royal compound also. See, if Daniel, Mordechai is on the Daniel team, obviously. You understand? I think when it says, Ish Yehudi Hayah B'Shushan Abira, what do you mean, Ish Yehudi Ayshin Shabir? He's a lobbyist in Capitol. No, that's seriously, right? It was a Jew at the court. Look, it's 127 provinces. The government has to deal with all the different groups. There are Syrian representatives there. There are Turkish representatives there. There are Egyptian representatives there. And there are Jewish representatives, right? And so happened, the Jewish representative was Daniel, who had been prime minister anyway, so they had an in. Like you know, there are big lobbyists in different White Houses. You know, they have an in. So Ish Yehudi B'Shushan Abira means Mordechai was a Jewish lobbyist at court, part of Daniel's team. In other words, he was a person known to the king, which means that Mordechai was not an average rabbi. He was a lobbyist with the skills of a lobbyist, but he was smart enough not to show off his knowledge of foreign languages. Otherwise, Bigson and Seresh would never have spoken in his presence. So that shows he was a smart cookie. You now keep your mouth shut. It's very important if you're a lobbyist to know when to talk and when not to talk. Especially if you're at a court like Persia, where everything's everybody stabbing everybody in the back every minute.
Okay, was Daniel much older than Mordechai?
We don't know. I'm sure. I don't know. I can't say. I don't know. You're right. Maybe not. So think of the royal compound as containing 127 sets of lobbyists. This is the cosmopolitan milieu of Shushan Abira. It's the cosmopolitan milieu of the book of Megillas Esther. That's what it is. Now, the death of Cyrus, who had not categorically forbidden the rebuilding of the Second Temple, he just said, you stop until I change my mind. Okay? As he said those words, ad minisim tem, unless I change my mind. So the death of Cyrus, which is not categorically forbidden the rebuilding of the temple, left the question of the Beis HaMikdash, should you allow the Jewish temple to be rebuilt, as an open issue. Daniel and company opened the issue, trying to get the new king to issue a renewal of the construction. But that, we know from the book of Ezra, spurred the anti-Semitic lobby to go into action, and they lobbied against it. And in the book of Ezra, it says specifically, in Ezra it says, Ubamalchus Achashverosh, Betchilas Malchuso, Kosu Sitna, Ayosh Yerushalayim. That's all it says. That at the beginning of the reign of Achashverosh, the anti-Semitic party wrote a whole memorandum against the rebuilding of the temple. Why at the beginning of Achashverosh? Sure, because Cyrus changed his mind, he died, and now there's a new guy in, and now obviously the Jews are pushing to get the temple rebuilt, and the anti-guys are pushing in their way. It doesn't say any more details in the book of Ezra. This Israel-Palestine dispute was a subject of hot intrigue in the reign of the new king Ahasuerus in the royal compound. Who's going to win, Daniel or the anti-Semites? So the whole background of the Megillas Esther is a contest inside Shushan Abira, who can bribe and who can finagle who. And with a guy like Ahasuerus, do I get to your butler? Do I get to your girlfriend? That's how these things work, okay? Nothing. I won't say it's underhanded. Everybody's underhanded. That's how it works in the Middle East. If you don't think that this is not going on in the Trump White House at this moment, I bet you the Arab son-in-law of Trump is trying to push his shtick and get Jared Kushner to push his shtick. We don't see this. We just see the junk on the internet. You know, what really is going on is, I'll tell you right now, this guy's getting Trump for his birthday a gold zah. and Jared Kushner is going to get him a diamond stock. You understand? I mean, this, that's how these things work. Because you got to. You got to. That's all. This is all, it's all tax deductible from a Jewish point of view. Right?
Cost of doing business.
That's how it goes. Now, wait a second. And by the way, who were the anti-Semitic lobbyists at the beginning of Rene Achashverosh? Team Haman. That's what it says. Because it says in the Rashi says in Megillah, in, on the Tesla Amid Aleph, in 16a, Rashi says that there was, I don't know if you remember this in the Gemara, it says, Balayla hu naradosh nasa melech, vayomer lehovi yasef divrei hamil, vayu nikroim lefnei hamelech. He'll tell you, vayu nikroim is funny. Vayu, it was nikroim red. In other words, it's a passive verb. So the Gemara says like this, Shimshai mochek, and Amal Gavriel kosev. You understand? Which means that Shimshai was erasing it, and the angel Gabriel put it in, or somebody on the pay of Mordechai. But the point is that there's this all tension going back and forth. The Rashi says, Shimshai sofer amelch soni Yisrael hoya. That Shimshai, that's a guy's name. He was the royal scribe, and he was an anti-Semite. Will be most kairish hoya, and he went back already to the time of Cyrus. Shenemar b'sefer Ezra, Rashi says, because it told you in Ezra, Shekosra sitna albinyan beis hamigdash ha-shabon korish ubitlam. That Shimshai and Team Haman, they were the ones who were the lobbyists on behalf of the anti-Semitic, and they got Cyrus to change his mind, and they succeeded also in frustrating the building of the temple at the beginning of the new king in the reign of Achashverosh. This is Rashi. And it says in the Sefer Seder Olam that it was the Bnei Haman. So you got the court of the royal compound of Shushan Abira. You got 127 different groups of lobbyists. No, you have 128. Right? You have the Israeli lobby, you have the anti-Israel lobby. Right? You have the Beis HaMikdash rebuilding lobby, and you have the guys against it. You understand? They don't necessarily represent a nation, they represent an anti-group. Or the Palestinians, or some equivalent thereof. I mean, that's what...
254. 27 times 2. Throw it
again. No, no, no. 127 plus 1.
Should be double everything.
What do you mean double?
Throw it against it.
Double?
No. There's no Turkish for and against.
Oh,
there's no...
only against the Jews. Yeah,
yeah, there's only no Siamese for and against. The Jews had for and against. As we just saw. It says, at the beginning of Achashverosh, they wrote the whole thing against the Jews. Right? Doesn't say... Look, I wasn't there. Doesn't say, at the beginning of Achashverosh, they wrote a thing against the Egyptians. Doesn't say they wrote a thing against the Syrians, because there was no problem with them. The Jews had an agenda. They wanted to rebuild the temple. And it was important to them. And the anti-Semites didn't want that. That makes sense. Okay? So anyway, the Haman clan, the Haman clan is reduced as lobbyists, and indeed, Sofer HaMelech, they're big shots in the bureaucracy, they're royal scribes, part of their government secretariat. They're not introduced as billionaires later on. Haman comes in as a billionaire. Okay, as we shall see, that comes later. As we know, the anti-Semites at court defeated the Jewish lobby, because Achashverosh would not agree to rebuild the temple. Why? Why? The answer, of course, is, the anti-Semites got Vashti into the king's bed. She was their mood. According to Chazal, Vashti is one of the four most beautiful women. According to another opinion, not Vashti, but Esther. So she was the fifth most beautiful woman in the world. Big deal. You see? That's the difference between husband and wife. If my wife told me, you're the fifth most handsome guy in the world, I'd be very flattered. Now go tell your wife she's the second most beautiful woman in the world. You're in the doghouse, baby. Okay? So... think about that. Think about the fact that they moved in Vashti, who was one of the most beautiful of women, and you're dealing with a guy like Achashverosh. What is the inevitable effect of this beauty on a Sybarite like Achashverosh? I mean, come on. And she had class. She had the bearing of a queen because she was descended from royalty. She wasn't a concubine, and she knew it. She used her beauty and influence to win over the new king, and she even got Daniel fired because they said to Kol Chasoch, let's put it this way, he was demoted. Now, I'm going like Tosis. He was demoted from being number one in the government because Darius to me wanted to put him as number one. And now he's one of seven counselors because he's Mamuchan. So, I mean, he's not demoted to private first class, but he wasn't numero uno. You understand? Now, after a long, distinguished career at the top, they used to call him Chasoch, al-shem shechadchu migdoloso, but formerly, divrei amalchus nechtochen al-piv. All means that formerly he was a big shot, everything ran through him. In the bureaucracy, and now he was reduced, he was cut down. what's the right word? Reduction in force. You know, what's his name? Elon Musk, you know. Yeah, that's right, fired, right. Vashti, according to Chazal, appealed to the king's affection for her classiness. She said to him, Bias, Shavose Hechrivu Atotivna, the temple that my fathers, Nebuchadnezzar, destroyed, you're going to rebuild it? That would be an insult to me. And it worked. As a result, Vashti and her side dominated the court, and the temple was not built. That covers the first 3 years of the reign of Ahasuerus. Okay? But all this time, we know from the Gemara, Ahasuerus was superstitious about the whole temple thing. He was superstitious. Because remember Isaiah 45? What do you do with that prophecy? I have named you to rule the world in order to help Avdi Yaakov, Vami Yisrael. You know, what about that? Cyrus had not categorically banned the temple. He too was suspicious of that, right? He's superstitious. He had just stopped it until further notice. In my opinion, Ahasuerus was nervous over the fact that what happened shortly after. Now, Ahasuerus was in there for 2.5 years. What happened shortly after he changed his mind and put a stop order on the building of the second temple? He died. Right? Now, if you're a superstitious guy,
yeah.
Right? It's got nothing to do with lucky. The Jews are, it's bad luck. it's bad luck. That's a modern interpretation. According to Chazal, let me put it this way. Ahasuerus was nervous about the fact that Cyrus had died not long after stopping the building and not changing his mind and allowing the construction to resume. According to the Gemara, Ahasuerus was spooked. He was nervous that the 70-year prophecy would be fulfilled and anyone who blocked it would perish. That's the Gemara Megillah. That's why he counted the 70 years. He said the other guy made a mistake. I'll count it right. It was only when the 70-year prophecy was up, in his opinion, and nothing had happened. Now, he was mistaken, but he thought nothing had happened, that he felt at ease and he threw a party for the Jews in the royal compound, right? In other words, I'm partying at your expense, okay? You have all the food. Stop lobbying me. Stop pestering me. I don't want to hear no about the temple. The 7 years are done. He wore, we're told, the vestments of the high priest. You understand? In other words, get over it, you guys. Just be in the empire and mind your own business and don't bug me with this Yerushalayim junk, okay? Now, that's why he called the Cholom and Nimsim B'Yerushalayim, Nimsim B'Shishan HaBirah, Lemi Godova Katon. He invited everybody in Shushan Abir, in the royal compound, don't say the city, in the royal compound. So that means he invited the lobbyists and their entourage, their families and employees. He invited the lobbyists and their families, like you do an office Christmas party, that kind of thing. No, I'm very serious. Now, there's a reason I say this. And even later, when Esther was the queen and found favor in the king's eyes, which is, you know, he gave her the scepter and everything. Remember, he said like this, I'll give you everything. And Chazal say, now, what does that mean? Rashi said, well, the Beis HaMikdash is flat in the middle of the world, you know, which it isn't. But Dover Chosei Malchus is something that would split the empire, meaning we'll reintroduce the controversy between the two lobbies. He says, I'm sick of that stuff. You ever look at Harry S. Truman in his biography? He said, I guess nobody drove me crazy like the Jews with the Palestine issue. He says that. Even though he recognized Israel, he said, nobody drove me as crazy as this. You understand? So, anyway, he said, I'll give you half the kingdom, which Chazal say means I'll give you half the 127 provinces, but don't bring up the temple. That's too politically divisive. It's a Dover Shechotzeis Mamalchus. And by the way, Esther is smart. During the, you never see in the Megillah she ever brings up the Beis HaMikdash. She knew which button not to press. You get it? In other words, a lobbyist can overdo it. A trick is to go as far as the, you know, traffic will bear, and you don't overdo it. Otherwise, it's counterproductive, you see? And even Mordechai, when he becomes prime minister in this book, never brings up the Beis HaMikdash, right? It's enough you get rid of Haman, and you do this, and then, you know, that's also good. Now, later on, when the king dies, and the new king comes in, then they make the move. That's the story. This is a whole subtext to the whole Megillah. Now, by the time of the second party, Vashti, the main asset of the anti-Semitic team, had been killed in the course of the first parties, I told you. To be sure, it happened when the king was been in a drunken stupor. But when, in his inebriated state, he solicited the advice of his seven counselors, and who spoke? Mabuchan, which is Daniel, who was demoted by Vashti. So she gives disinterested advice, right? She says, in my opinion, what the queen has done is so bad, you should chop her head off. In other words, if you ask me, What do you think should be done to Hitler with jaywalking? Kill him. Right? That's just an objective opinion. Right? Yeah, right. When did you become such a big philosopher? The answer is, you're asking Netanyahu what should be done to Hamas, you know, for you know, violating the rules of grammar, right? Right, for violating grammar. So what did he say? I need a clue. So you think you answer? I beg your pardon. Now, the Targum Sheni, which is a famous commentary, says that when the king sobered up, right? When the king sobered up, presumably at the end of 180 days, he regretted the death of Vashti and was angry at the advisors and ordered them killed. That's what it says. It's not clear because you're conflicting agadotas, but maybe that was the end of Daniel. So it doesn't seem so because later on Daniel is supposed to be one of the Anshei Knesset Gedolah. We know from the Medrash Rabbah that when the king ordered the second party for all the people in the royal compound, meaning the Jews, it says the Jewish elites fled before the party. You see, they knew what's coming, fearing for their lives. Gedoli Hadar Hayusham Ubarchu. Okay? In the book of Daniel, we know, at least it seems, that Daniel knew this tactic and he fled before Nebuchadnezzar erected that golden statue. Because perhaps you remember that Hananiah Mishael Azariah had to be thrown in a fiery furnace because he would not bow down to the statue. So the remaining question is, where was Daniel? And the Chazal say the king liked Daniel and he forgot about the flunkies. And he told Daniel before he sets up the statue, I said, I know you have a religious issue with this, so I'm sending you on an inspection tour. So you'll be out of town when this happens, you won't get into trouble. So Daniel was quite familiar with the tactic of not just not being there when the bad stuff happens. You see, not being there. And so he fled town before Nebuchadnezzar set up the idol. Probably, maybe Daniel did the same thing over here. In my opinion, at least this year, this is why Daniel is described as, Mordechai is described, Ish Yehudi, Hayu B'Shushan Abira, which Chazal say Ish Yehudi means Ish Yechidi. What do you mean Ish Yechidi, Hayu B'Shushan Abira? All the other lobbyists fled, Mordechai was the only guy who stayed. So it was one Jew. Right? He said, I'm taking my chances, because somebody has to be here, because if there's nobody in the White House, we're doomed. You know what I'm saying? Somebody has to hold the fort. I'm taking my chances for Klal Yisrael. And because he was the Jewish lobby, it's all that was left. The Megillah, that's why all we hear is in the book of Esther is from Mordechai. The other guys hit the road, you see? Was it heroic? Was it heroic? That's what happened.
Would things have been different had they all been there? Do you think things would have been different had there been more?
I don't know.
More in the
I don't know. There's no way to know. Let me put it this way. I'll put it this way. At least he played the game his way.
Right.
If there's one guy, then what's good is you don't have other. You don't want a board meeting on everything. You don't want a board meeting on everything. Now sometimes you need a board. You don't need a board. Sometimes you just say we're doing this, you know, because otherwise they could be cross purposes. What's that?
Too many chefs in the kitchen.
Yeah. Right. The Megillah doesn't make clear, but it says Ish Yechidi Hayu B'Shushan Abira. He was the lobbyist. The Megillah does not make clear the details of the Jews at the party. Why would Mordechai and Esther even make those details? They wrote the Megillah. Why bring up, what was it called in the harbor?
Dirty Laundry.
Remember the harbor? What am I talking about? The ship? Kim Shavers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Why bring that up? You know what I mean? Why bring that up? You know, you don't mention that in the Megillah. Okay? Now, such details would have been embarrassing Mordechai when they wrote to Megillah. But we know from the colloquy between Rashbi, Shimichai, and the students that the Jewish attendees went to the party. Okay? Now, wait a second. Who attended the party? It was the lobbyists and their families. Limi Gadol V'Yad Katan doesn't mean Achashverosh invited babies and children.
Right.
He made big shots and small shots. So what are the big shots? The lobbyists. Who are the small shots? Their children, their families. They're saying, like, you get invited sometimes to these parties, you know, where you bring your thing.
Like us.
Right. That's right. No, wait a second. No, I'll tell you exactly what it means. If you've been to Christmas parties, you've been to holiday parties, there's a certain art. The lobbyists, like Mordechai, they know how to walk around 4 hours holding a bottle of Coke. Right? And look like you're having a great time. It's necessary. It's necessary, that's all. But they learned how to do it on the job. You know, Abba Kohn, these guys. I mean, you got to know how to go to all these situations, and you're there, but you're not there. Right? That's a skill.
Right.
But, so they went, they were not Nehe and Emisudo Shach HaShverish, but their children, their wives, their flunkies, all they walk into, ooh, Ooh, look at the food. Look at all the rest of it. And they enjoyed themselves at the party. You can go to the office party. You can't enjoy it. You're not supposed to have a good time. No, I'll say again. You got to go. You got to go. That's a, you know, that's business. You know, so you got to do what you got to do. But you don't go and fall into it. I've been like once or twice in my life. Those things that Hopkins had something before in the old regime. You know, now it's much more Jewish people in charge of the department. But you know, in the old regime, I was at a thing in Roland Park. In super non-Jewishville, and it was Jewish. It was catered by Charles Levine. Okay? And Charles Levine. I couldn't do nothing. I walked the whole time. And by the way, you know, this is fancy schmancy people. So they sat on the floor with tuxes, and, you know, and they gave everybody out a plate of food. And listen, I had to learn on the job. So, you know, looking there. And you mash the food. And they say, thank you, it was very good. And so forth. While I was talking to this nice couple, he was a pastor. He was a graduate student in the Near Eastern Studies Department. Nice guy. His wife, she was doing Kiruv for Protestants in the dorm at Loyola.
Crazy.
Right? In other words, two very nice people. And all the rest of, what am I supposed to do? What are you supposed to do? And, you know, they give you a bottle of wine. So that's if you know what you're doing. The other one is, this food is great. this is better than officials. This is better than any. Do you see? So they were not professionals. They didn't know how. They were not trained in From Diplomacy. From Diplomacy needs training. You have to go and be an apprentice, Malcolm Honlein, all this stuff. That's what you got to do. You understand? And so you go and not around people not Jewish, not be influenced by them. That requires wisdom and training. So what does it say? Was the sin. Not that they ate the party. They had a good time. This was a big sin. Now, by the time of the second party, the king's close retinue, because it says the Naria Melch, Misharsov, it doesn't say, let's put it, you probably don't notice this. Who advises him to have the beauty pageant? I just noticed it this year. I didn't notice it before. Who is it that advises the king, to have a beauty pageant? So you think it's the seven counselors who said kill Vashti? No, it's not. Huh? No? No. No, no, no. That's what we think. But if you look, it says, Vayomru Narei HaMelech Misharsav, Lonasever, his Na'arim, his close little, the guys who were to put on his shoes and take off his pants and all, you know, the butlers or whatever you call them, the valets. It's just interesting. And by the way, there are the guys later who said, Homa B'chaser. You see? They didn't like Homan either. It's just interesting. Why did they like Haman? I would think like this. Because they could... I'll tell you why they didn't like Haman. I'm just thinking this now. Haman's not so smart. He got too arrogant. The king said, what should we do to somebody we want to honor? Put on the royal clothes and wear the royal horses. What's the king thinking? Oh, you want my job. Right? You want my job. Is that how it goes? Yes? So maybe after he killed Mordecai, he would kill Haman. You see? And the Na'arim, what do they say? They say, if this guy takes it, we're out of a job. If he takes over, he'll put in his guys. We'll be out of a job. Therefore, it was in their interest. So now, when Vashti was killed, the Na'arim around, they say, make a beauty contest, pick another girl. Okay? You see, now, wait a second. Now, it says, look, Na'arim Melch Mishar Sub, his personal valets, it said it. Now, this happened during the first party in the third year of the reign. I told you that before. So the 180-day booze is still going to pay, so I'll tell us what's going on. What about rebuilding? What about rebuilding the temple? What about that issue? It's the third year. Here the king must have been conflicted. For the first 3 years of his reign, Vashti had influenced him. Now Vashti's gone. That left the king torn between Zionists and anti-Zionists, between Haman and Team Mordecai. Now comes the irony. The Jews, meaning Mordecai, did not see Vashti as, meaning the fall of Vashti, as an opportunity to put a Jewish babe in there and the king's been in her place, even though that's what happened despite their best efforts. Because you think, simply by paying politics, they had Vashti in, we're going to get Esther in. But he didn't do that. Because Esther was his relative, and you don't want to put a Jewish girl in that situation. Right? That's the old sensibility. I don't know what the Mossad does now, I don't know. But I know in the first 15 years that Mossad was run by Isser Harel. He's a famous guy. And he had a few rules. And one of the rules is we don't use Jewish girls for these jobs. Right? We get somebody else. We don't use Jewish girls. That, you know, he wasn't a from guy, but he was from Europe. You understand? You don't use a Jewish girl for that. So, what do you call it? So they didn't want it. During these 4 years, because it was 4 years of the beauty part, pageant, the party was in the third year, and it says Esther came in the seventh year. So for 4 years, just think about that, by the way. Think about it. It's an endless stream, okay? So Esther was in hiding. She didn't come in the house. This is based on the idea, this is the Targum Sheni, that she was beautiful, not a Yerach Rokas. She was a beauty. Notice Mordechai hit her, and Shushan Abiri hit her. So notice these are the royal chambers, and you got butlers and everything running else. So it was really like Anne Frank, you know? And why? Because Mordechai saw what's going on in the court. He saw the beauty pageant. He sees all these girls from Dundalk. You understand? That's who you're dealing with, you know? They're from Appalachia. You understand?
Nice tooth.
That's exactly right, yeah. That's a nice tooth he got there, baby. Listen. He's right. It says, I'm going to tell you something. It says over there.
Just to find their face.
It says that Vik Batsula call that Rab Sula Tamar said, Vinoson Tamrukihem, and give them appropriate give them appropriate cosmetics. Yeah, it turns out 12 months of cosmetics. So he got girls from the pigsty.
Just to find their face.
This is Miss Afghanistan of 2024. Wow. You know what I'm saying? That's what's over there. And Mordechai wasn't stupid. He said, like this, if they meet Esther, she's a BJJ girl, you know? You know, she's going to go right to the front. Which happened. Because it says, when she came there, she said, the guy in charge says, she doesn't need any makeup. Right. She's the first girl that didn't bite the bar of soap. You know? This is what it says. It says, "Kishagia Torah Esther Basa Vichela Lo Big Shal Davar Kibin Hashem Yolah." Hey guys, three times Al Shem Hashem, but Esther knows it. As soon as he saw it, by the way, it said by Shanaza, he immediately put her in the executive suite. You don't want to be. You don't want to use the bathroom with these other girls. I mean, that's what it says. See, you don't read it. I mean, that's what it says. Yeah. 6 months, these girls had to be in perfume, and 6 months in depilatories. Oh, boy.
Just to find the face.
So Mordechai didn't want that. He knew if Esther gets found, then it's done deal. Even though from a political point of view, right, from a cynical political point, he wanted to put her in there, right? But he wasn't built that way. You see, it wasn't built that way. And so what happened? Mordechai hit her in Shushan Abira. He see the hillbilly types you brought in, who required 12 months of perfume. He realized if Esther enters the beauty contest, she'll nuke the opposition. And it happened that way when she was fast-tracked by Haggai. She was the first contestant who didn't eat the soap. And Mordechai didn't want her to become queen. That would ruin her whole Yiddishkeit situation, and it would ruin her personal life, which happened. She hated the king as a man, and later on in the Gemara Megillah, she says, "Save me from this dog." That's after she was with him for 5 years. Hatzilena Mikel was there, right? It's in Tehillim in 32. It was in spite of Mordechai's efforts that she became the queen and won influence by being a BJJ instead of Vashti the slut. And that must have been new for Ahasuerus, right? What kind of girls was he in? They were jumping on him. He's the first girl who was a Tzinias. He said, "Oh, this is like Irishman finding water." What is this? What is this? Okay. What's that?
You use it to make whiskey.
Yeah, right. So anyway, it was a new song. She went to the song. What happened now was this. According to Targum Sheni, there were people who had seen her beforehand. They told the king there's a real beauty over here and she's being hidden. The king issued a decree saying anybody hides the girl gets killed. At that point, Mordechai had no choice. He had to produce her. And 1, 2, 3, she went to the top.
Right.
Okay? That's what happened. And all that happened after 4 years of hiding in the seventh year of the king. Thus, in unplanned fashion, Team Mordechai reversed the strategy of Team Haman, and they put the beautiful Esther in the queen's bed instead of Vashti. I'll bet Mordechai probably figured like this. Make lemonade out of crushed lemons? You know, I wasn't planning for this to happen, but if it happened, let's move it. Let's do it. But notice, and let's use Esther now to lobby for building a second temple. But immediately events intervene, and he saw he couldn't do it. Because what happens right after Esther becomes the queen? Mordechai saves the king's life from the plot of Bigson and Seresh. Now, what should have been the aftermath? of saving the king's life from Bigsa Miseresh. The king just says, wow, I really owe you my life. How can I repay you? End the stop order, rebuild the temple. But Ahasuerus didn't want to do that. He knew that Mordecai would do so. That's why he had the whole thing put in the lobby books. And the first thing he does afterwards is appoint Haman as prime minister. That's his way of saying, I don't want to do this. You see? That's the events. You read it, right? Achai Torman. And then he saves the life. And then he appoints Haman. Like, thanks a lot. So you see, the king didn't want that to happen. Okay?
But he's the king.
No, I know that, but you're a king over 127 provinces. You can kill everybody you want, but it's not intelligent to do that. You want to try to manage the situation as if... This is the problem, as I always say, you need philosophy. What if you won the Powerball lottery? You, Jay Myers, and you have $500 million. What would you do the rest of your life? Then you say, test me, I know.
I'm only on the beach.
Yeah, right. I had a girl in college. Right. I said this. She's Irish, actually. Reagan is her name. He says, what do you call it? What would you do if you won the lottery? I spend the rest of my life on the beach. She's undergrad at Hopkins. You spend your whole life, yep, every day. Right? Okay. It's not hurting anybody, right? Anyway, the point's like this. Wait a second. The new king owed Mordecai big time because he saved his life, but he knew that Mordecai would ask his reward to build a temple. King wouldn't do so. Instead, he named Haman, Mordecai's nemesis, as prime minister. Okay? Now, and there's a chazal like this. Rabbi Yudamar, Mordecai, Achar Hadvorim Mo'ela, Achar Achashverosh, here. Achashverosh started thinking. Amar Mordecai Mavakish lived in the base of Migdash. Lived knows the Yevsher. Lach Zero Yevsher. Ela Haridi Megarbo is Homa Be Bazeb Bonabazeb Soser. So the king, as a matter of Machiavellian politics, he said the only way to prevent Mordecai from getting his thing, I'll put him in as prime minister. Now, realizing immediately how the new king's mind worked, because if you're Mordecai and you save his life and you see the guys with, and you're smart, you see how you got to play the game, okay? Subsequently, seeing how the king's mind worked, Mordecai tells Esther, who was just appointed queen, shut up and told everybody you're Jewish. Right? Because the events happen 1, 2, 3. Esther gets appointed king, Mordecai saves the life, he appoints Haman as prime minister. How's that work? He immediately, and then he says, Esther doesn't tell who she is. Right? Post hoc ergo propter hoc. So realizing how the king's mind worked, Mordecai tells Esther not to say she's Jewish, otherwise Haman, as lobbyist and now prime minister, will work to undermine you. Mordecai was certainly aware of how undermining was a strategy used by both sets of lobbyists in this snake pit of a Persian court. I assumed that Esther was blonde-haired and blue-eyed and didn't look Jewish, so you could not tell she was Jewish from the fact she was in Mordecai's house. Because that they knew. After all, in those days, you had slave-holding societies. She could have been anyone. You know, people had all kinds of different nationalities, which is hard for modern people to understand, but the old world in the middle, after all, Haman had once been a member of Mordecai's household. He'd been a slave in Mordecai. So just because somebody came from the house, you don't know who they are. Okay? And according to Seder Olam, chapter 29, the new prime minister, Haman, spends the next 5 years, because how come he didn't make a move right away? Mordecai refused to bow down from day one. And you don't see anything happen for 5 years. So Haman spent the next 5 years undermining Mordecai's position in court. It's an enigmatic passage in the Seder Olam. It says, "Kol chamesh shanim hayakones shlal Mordecai." Now how do you translate that? Did Haman sabotage Mordecai's stock portfolio? Maybe. Right? This would make sense. Every court Jew in history had to be rich to bestow dusurs right and left. That's how it goes. All right? And anyway, bankrupting Mordecai would eliminate his influence at court, so Mordecai couldn't block Haman's plan. I mean, it is strange that the king, when presented with the Haman's Holocaust Initiative, didn't consult Mordecai to get a second opinion. Okay? Simply as a matter of prudent statesmanship. After all, when he had the issue with Vashti, he called in 7 counselors, and he says, and this is how the king always operated, right? Meaning, as a prudent business, if an emperor, you just have certain procedures bureaucratically to hear different opinions before you make your mind up. And when Haman says, let's kill the Jews, the king says, done. Why didn't he say like this? Maybe it's a second opinion? I guarantee you, if you would ask Mordecai, Mordecai says this, we'll give you 20,000 talents of silver instead of 10. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what you got to do. You see? He would do it. You see? So, this, in my opinion, instead of consulting anybody, That's why Chazal say that Achashverosh was a Russia Sunni Yisrael. Because the Baal Charisma tell, you know, he was glad to get rid of the Jews. Because you just heard Haman's radical proposal without going through the vetting process they usually do in the bureaucracy. It's a real mumser. Indeed, in my opinion, this is why the Medrash, not the Gemara, says, has a whole story about how he runs it through the council and he says the Jews have always been bad and they've been ungrateful and all the rest. It's a whole long thing. And therefore, we vote bureaucratically to back the Haman scheme. You understand? But Miguel doesn't say that. So maybe it took 5 years to unobtrusively bankrupt Mordechai. You get it? To my point, alternatively, Konis Shlal Mordechai could be that he bureaucratically appropriated all of his offices. It took 5 years to get slip this guy in to be head of USAID, and slip this guy in eventually over time to be head of the Department of this. Huh? Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. What seems to me most likely is that Mordechai was too powerful at the beginning of the 5 years. He had just saved the king's life. So Haman decided to be patient, to bankrupt Mordechai and bleed his influence slowly but surely, and with the passage of time, make his move, which is what happened, took 5 years. Now, there's another way to explain the 5 years. Mordechai, Haman wanted to set up his own network of bureaucrats and officials throughout the 127 provinces. So when their tag, the day comes to kill all the Jews, his guys will be in there. So basically, it took him 5 years to get all the police commissioners and head of the militia and all this kind of stuff in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Kazakhstan and Pakistan and this, that, and the other. So that when the time comes and you get the letters from me, you move. You see? And you won't be bribed by the local Jews or anything like that. You know, you'll move. Make a final solution with no survivors. That required a lot of preparation, and Haman played a long game. Okay? So the story of Miguel's Esther is the two sets of lobbies playing long games. A lot of patience. You see? Long games. In this reading, Mordechai refused from the seventh year to bow down. And immediately Haman said, "Vayivas beinav l'shloch yad b'Mordechai levado." I don't want to just kill Mordechai. I'll kill all the Jews, but it takes 5 years to execute the plan. He was willing to do it right in Haman's way, okay? 5 years of hachonas, which reminds you of the story of Achitophel with King David when he very cleverly set up the whole rebellion of Avshalom Dovid and no idea what's happening. But meanwhile, when the time came to rebel against David, the whole Jewish people sided with Avshalom. Why? Because he already had the guy. He already put his guy in CNN. He put another guy in Fox News. He put a guy in the State Department. He put a guy over here. It doesn't happen overnight. But when the time came, he moved. Okay? Indeed, I'm sure just like Achitophel kept King David in the dark until it was almost too late. The only reason that the rebellion of Avshalom didn't work was Avshalom was too stupid to listen to the advice of Achitophel. That's the story. Achitophel says, "Now make your move and kill the guy now." And he said, "No, let's take our time." If he would have listened, it would have worked. So two Haman would keep the Jews in the dark until it was too late. And then, but here Haman was mistaken, like every crime novel, the criminal makes a mistake. Mordechai found that. Now how did Mordechai find that? Mordechai, oh no. Ruach HaKodesh, a paid informant, a blabbermouth, a girlfriend, I don't know. But he found out, okay? Right away he found out. An impoverished Mordechai, no money anymore, had one ace in the hole, Esther. And nobody knew about her. You see? No one knew she's Jewish. Here we see Hashkacha Pratis, divine providence. The Jews knew she was Jewish because it says, I just hear that, why did she invite Haman to the party? So one opinion among Chazal is, I don't want the Jews to be overconfident. Achos Yeshlan B'Beis HaMelech. We have Jared in the White House. We don't have to daven. We have Ivanka in the White House. We don't have to daven. Right? So that means they knew she's Jewish. She was a blabbermouth. How can anybody know? But God made it that since she didn't tell on day one, so everybody thought she's their girl. The Irish said, like this, she's Irish. I can tell that in a second. The Italian said, like this, she's Sicilian just by the nose. The Greek said, look at that. Look at the fingers. Milamish should call Echad Nin Misokumoso. Since she didn't tell who she was, everybody thought she's their girl. Right? And the Spanish said, like this, oh, the high heels, you know. She's a flamenco dancer. You know, they knew, right? So there are two ways of hiding things. One is to keep it totally secret. The other was to flood the information that with false information.
Yeah.
You see? That's the other way. Which is happening now, by the way. That, right?
That's how I say yes.
I know that. Well, I will tell you something. This was God's way of making Queen Esther. Yeah, the Jews said she's a Jewish girl. We have Ivanka in the White House. So did the Palestinians. So did the Egyptians. So did the Ruskies. You know what I'm saying? That's Hashem's way of making it. Which means Mordechai's advice was a good advice politically. Because nobody knew she's Jewish. Everybody knew she's Jewish. Nobody knew she's Jewish. You know, so two guys at a bar, a Jew and an Irishman. The Jew's like, oh, she's a Jewish girl. The Irishman's like, ah, she's an Irish girl. You see, that's how conversations went. You see, so as I said before, nobody knew she's Jewish, and therefore it was able to. And by the way, that's certainly the basis for the Chazal that say that she ate treif when she was in the palace, right? Kad the Chazir, she ate bacon, she ate ham. First of all, as part of the disguise, you see. I mean, you got to do what you got. Let me ask you a question: did Eli Cohn ever eat treif?
Did what?
Eli Cohn.
Syria.
Did you?
Oh, okay. 1940s. So go. Yeah.
1960s.
He could have been a vegetarian.
Yeah. Vegetarians are like, oh, she's on
a bar.
He would have been caught.
No vegetarian eggs, but I don't eat.
If Bert Miller told me, wearing a beret instead of a yarmulke, I only eat vegetarian sorts of things after it's been properly washed, right? I would start to get suspicious over there, right? No, why does Rabbi Yochanan say that she ate ham? Because listen, it's part of the cover up. She had to do it. Let me put it this way: if she ate chazer, Mordechai told her to. It says, "Mamar Mordechai, Esther osa kasher osa b'mnoito." Mordechai says, "Listen, I didn't want you in this situation, but like I say, once you're here, let's make lemonade and crush lemons, and just don't tell anybody you're Jewish. Do it. Obviously, this mina shamayin, and like I say, you're Eli Cohn, and you got to do what you got to do, right?" I'm sorry about that, but you got to do what you got to do. After all, who said that she can sleep with the king? You know, it's what it is.
Make Hamantashen out of Ham.
Yeah, that's right. Hamantashen out of Mon, right? Ham. So, oh boy. So, anyway, the bottom line is like this. The other opinion is she ate Zeronim, which is what Bert Miller said, that she ate vegetables and that sort of thing. But that's a frummy art scroll sensibility, you understand? How could a tzedekis? No, that's where you're coming from. How could a tzedekis, like Esther, every chazer? It's inconceivable. It's the same Tosfos that the Zohar that says she couldn't sleep with the king. It was a shade. There was a Zohar like that. It was a demon. I mean, a shade that did it. I get it. I mean, I hear the point. But that's not the story. The story is she found herself in a bad situation and she had to do what she had to do. She ain't the first and she ain't the last. I hope she's the last, but she might not be the last. She might not be the last. Okay? So for 5 years, both sides played a long game. Haman is doing his shtick and Esther is keeping her mouth shut and her eyes open. Right? Her mouth shut and her eyes open. And the other side doesn't. And let's put it this way. In this game, the only ace that Mordechai has that the other side doesn't know about. Okay. The only ace that the other side has that Mordechai doesn't know about is the Esther. Because Haman has no idea she's Jewish. As you know. The ikker by Esther was Taka Hester. That's why they say Esther. She had to live a lie for 5 years. Okay, that's not easy, by the way. You see? To live a lie for 5 years, actually, for some people it is easy, but for her it wasn't easy. Okay, keep your mouth shut and your eyes open, like Israel did recently with the Patriots and the Hezbollah.
15 years?
Right? You had to play the long game. You see? They played the long game. Ever since 2006, they've been waiting for the day.
Before they had the target.
Yeah, I'm saying, right. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? If you want to win in the Middle East, you have no choice but to do this. Right? Think about the self-control that Esther had to display to pull that off. And she did something else. I don't think it was planned. Rather, it was divine providence. She was married to the king for 5 years and didn't have any children. Only when she says, I'll go to the king, and then she had a child. How could she have five children? How come she didn't have children for 5 years? Chazal say, Tosa says, and by the way, the king, they were doing it all the time. Because it says, why did Pigson and Seresh plot to kill Achashverosh? It says, Lo ra'inu sheino mitoch shayich aviva lo haymar b'tashu b'tzami lishtos. He said, we have no breaks anymore, because ever since this girl came in, the king's with her 24/7, has constantly calling for more wine. You see? So in other words, in the normal course of events, they went in together, she would have got pregnant, she had a baby, she'd be out of office for so and so many months, and he would move on to someone else. That's who he was. Never happened. Now, she didn't do it because she didn't have a kid, but the irony is that kept her together with him for 5 years. It's not what she wanted because she said this guy's a dog, right? But that's what happened, which means all 5 years he was nuts over her.
But then she says, I haven't seen him for 30 days. How can I approach him now?
That's recently, right? She didn't see him for 30 days. But no, but I'm saying not because you know, I'm pregnant or anything like that, right? See, you know, he didn't sit for 30 days. We don't know what the reason is, okay? But, hold on for a second. She wasn't the only queen. I mean, she wasn't the only concubine. But still, there was no time that she was off. Whatever he's doing. I've never been the king of Persia. And Karen, I never want to be. Right. Now, hold on for a second. In the normal course of events, she would have gotten pregnant, was stopping around him all the time, and then the king would have moved on. However, Tosa says, Mishnah, this is actually one of the classic makoras for a birth control question, because it says she was Mishamish Mamoch. So they never stopped being together for 5 years. Apparently, she was coy the whole time. She was a karka olam. And he didn't care. I'm not going there. I don't know what that was about. But when she says, Avol Amelcha Shelo Kados, I'll go to the king Shelo Kados, it's a double entendre. She's going to stop being coy. That's what it means. That's why she says, Avadati Avadi. Until now it was bonus, now be Bronson. Indeed, she didn't use birth control from now on, and she got pregnant not long afterwards. And that, ironically, after the story of Purim's over, and she's pregnant, then she wasn't around the king all the time, because then she had a child. Okay? That came later. So you could say that in the time of Hester Punin, when God was Hester Punin, so she deployed Hester Punin. The Gemara says like this, Esther min ator minayin, shenemar honochi aster punin b'mahu. So it's like a cute vart, you know, Hester. No, it's not a cute vart. How do you act at a time of Hester Punim, you have to be very Hester. Like Israel with Hezbollah. You have to be very secretive. You understand? You have to be secretive. You don't show your full thing. And so that's what happened. And there's a profound message in that. Now, as a result of the...
Did she know it was a time of Hester Punim? I mean, we're reading the story 2,200 years later.
I assume that since she saw that Mahmoud Khalil got appointed Secretary of State... She said, this seems to be Hester Punim. Haman, of all people, was appointed prime minister. I would call that Hester Punim where I come from. There was a result of the fall of Haman, the anti-Semitic lobbying team ceased to exist. Okay? Esther made sure of this because this is the first thing she does. She gives the house of Haman, she gives the family of Haman to Mordechai, and she says, kill him, and when there are 10 sons surviving later on, she says, kill them also, and they hang them all. Okay? In other words, Esther did to them what they were going to do to her. It's the Middle East. That's what they did to them. Or do you think it's outrageous violation of constitutional rights to deport a Hamas activist if he's advocating for, you know, the rest of it? Now, in addition, Mordechai was Ishichidi B'Yishma. He didn't have to deal with the Jewish voice for peace. In addition to getting Mordechai appointed the new prime minister, she immediately got the king right away to give the king the house of Haman, including the bank account, by the way. Okay? So, Mordechai moves in with his accountants. You know what I'm saying? When Haman is hanged, and she said, the king said, I'm giving you the house of Haman, I'll tell you right now, he moved in with the money managers. You know? What happened to my money? The king never wanted those 10,000 talents of silver. So, Taka, where are they? You know what I'm saying? This is real. Right? Now, Mordechai was financially back in business. He was on top. But he was prudent enough not to bring up the temple again. You see, he doesn't say now Haman's killed. Let's build the temple, because then the king could flip flop again. You understand? So clearly, this was a sore spot for the king, and he didn't want to make another Haman in there. However, when the king dies a year and a half later, Mordechai did indeed get the temple project reopened. According to the Yalkut Shimoni, Mordechai uses the money of Haman, much of which had been his own money in the beginning, which Haman got his hands on during the 5 years of the prime ministership. And what does he use the money for? To rebuild the Bayis Sheni. Okay. As it states in Yalkut Shimoni, HaKadosh Baruch Hu here, Yavo Haman, V'yichnos, let Haman amass the money, V'yochen Rasha V'tzadik Yilbash, and the Tzadik will get to wear it, V'yachar Kach, Yavo Mordechai, V'yit Lohemeno, V'yivne, Beis HaMikdash. Mordechai will use the money to build the Beis HaMikdash. Now either it means that money itself, or it could mean like this, Mordechai will use the new wealth to grease all the palms necessary to get the new project okayed. You see? In other words, it's amazing what you can do with money. It's not about money. So Mordechai used the new wealth to grease the palms of all the Persian big shots that he had cast in Binyan Bayis Sheni. This makes sense when we realize that Haman's wealth came, according to Medrash, he discovered the Otzeres Malchus Yehuda. He discovered the Jewish treasure. So now finally the Jewish treasure is ending up where it should be, used for building Bayis Sheni. Thus was the final disposition of the money was Nahar Maria Be Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, which was right and just. So to summarize, my friends, he had seven rounds. Round one went to Daniel. Round two went to Team Haman, Shimshai. Round three went to Vashti. Round four went to Daniel, Memuchan. Round five went to Haman. Round six went to Mordechai and Esther. Round seven went to building the Bayis Sheni, the second base of Migdash. And this, in the spirit of the Ramah, where it says, Bayom Hashvi, right? In the seventh round, Ketov Lev HaMelech, Bayayin, Yayin is sowed. Right? So, in the seventh year, finally had a happy ending. But it was, let me put it this way, if you weren't prepared to play the long game and be quiet when it's necessary to be quiet and put up with all this junk when it's necessary to put all the junk, the whole thing never would have happened. And now, as Paul Harvey says, Freilich and Purim.
Isn't there a motto that says,
Real important, everybody.